Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Net at Night is brought to you by AOL Radio at AOL.com/podcasting. This is Net at Night with Amber MacArthur and Leo Laporte. Episode 51 for May 6th, 2008.
Ding!
Net at Night is brought to you by Audible. For your free audiobook and a whole lot more, visit audible.com/night, N-I-G-H-T. And by listeners like you. Thanks for your donations. It's time for Net at Night with Amber MacArthur from Toronto. Hi, Amber.
Hello, Leo.
And I am here in beautiful Petaluma, and we are streaming live video, as we do now from now on, at twitlive.tv.
Yes, we are. Yeah. And it's pretty exciting, Leo. I've been following you along on different websites. I'm not allowed to say one in particular.
I know. They won't let us say that anymore.
I know. I can't say that.
They say we talk about it too much, the T word.
I know. I was going through stories today and trying to figure out what we were going to talk about, and I thought, I cannot mention the T word. So it's not in today's show, but
you know what the problem
say,
is,
I've been following you.
The problem is that people who use that thing, and everybody's going, you know, everybody who knows what it is saying, don't talk about it. And everybody who doesn't know goes, what? T what? What is the word? But everybody who uses, all right, I'll say it, Twitter, is into it, and everybody who doesn't use it isn't. So there's this great divide, right?
I
will say one thing, though. In the next, I would say, few hours, as Barack Obama, one hopes, wins North Carolina, I think he might lose Indiana, I will be beating him on Twitter, because in the next few hours, I will go to the number one person on the Twitter with followers in excess of 28,000.
See, that is just amazing. Do you remember?
I'm 30 behind him.
Unbelievable. Way back when we interviewed the founder of that site.
F. Williams.
I know I'm scared to mention names now. how new it was and how there were so few people on it. And now it's just exploding. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. And I think it's worth talking about, and at least certainly on Net at Night, because not because of it per se. In fact, there are people who prefer friend feed. In fact, Scoble's now kind of launching this. Scoble, Dave Weiner, and a few other ones are launching this kind of move away from Twitter towards friend feed for the same idea, but a different implementation. It's really not about that particular site, but it's about the idea of, it's kind of, I think, the next generation of social networking, where it's a little more real time. It's a little, I don't know how to describe it. It's kind of stripped down to the basic point of social, which is people, you know, kind of conversing with one another.
Yeah, it really, I mean, I think you really nailed it. It's real time. It's, you know, instant replies, instant conversation. I had posted a comment this morning about how electric cars were no longer allowed, or actually aren't allowed in Canada due to some testing with the Canada Transport Safety Board. And they said because they just didn't stand up in collisions with SUVs or trucks. And the interesting thing is that, of course, you know, we have Vespas and motorcycles on the road. So that theory doesn't really stand up. So I posted this just because I was reading it in The Economist and I was kind of angry for a minute. So I thought, I'm going to post a link to this. And immediately, you know, you get dozens and dozens of comments and links back and conversation going on. And, you know, I'm not going to get that from watching the news. I'm not going to get that two-way conversation. I'm not going to get that anywhere else, you know. And so it has this sort of addictive quality because you can immediately have a conversation with, you know, as many people as you want or even just the one-on-one conversation.
Yeah. I mean, I don't watch when I'm watching election returns or the Academy Awards or the Super Bowl, I always have Twitter running and it's like being at a party with other people. I mean, this is sad. It's sounding very pathetic, but it's about social. It really is. I noticed, what do you think of this, this new chat on Facebook? Now, when I go to Facebook, I get bombarded. About 50 people start chatting with me because they can see I'm online. I had to turn it off.
Oh, I don't. I have
same idea though.
Saying that I'm always offline.
Right.
So, but I do know what you mean. It is definitely the same idea that people just start talking to you instantly. But the thing that makes this other site different than something like Facebook is that You know, you don't, there's no expectation that you should reply right away. Whereas in a chat conversation, if you don't reply, it's considered rude. But on this other site, if you wait and reply the next day, it's still okay. So you don't have that pressure there, you know, and I don't know if they thought of that when they were developing it, but it certainly doesn't exist like it would within a chat client.
That is also critical to it. I think the reason people like us keep talking about it is not because we're trying to get people to use it. I couldn't care less. We're trying to understand what it is.
Yeah, I think that's really the most interesting thing about the internet and these different web technologies is understanding how people use it, you know, their behavior, you know, why people react to certain things. I mean, I find that even in using different applications is I'm so curious. For instance, I find, you know, I'll blog about something that I think is kind of cool, but it's not very controversial. It's just some neat site. No one says anything. As soon as I mention anything that's a little bit controversial, you know, obviously you have, you know, I'll have a few dozen comments on my blog. And so I love to monitor the behavior. And I think the best thing about it is that you realize that there are so many people on the internet who are so interested in learning and talking and discovering. It's just not a passive medium. If you're a passive person, the internet is just not necessarily the best place for you.
Well, so that's exactly what's happened. It's about conversation, not about monologue. And that's what's happened. That's how the media has transformed because mainstream media is all monologue.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, it's all a monologue. Someone's just sitting there talking and talking and talking at you. You know, if you want to just yell at them or if you want to say anything, you can't. So you're forced to just kind of sit there and just be complacent. And the web just isn't a place for people to be complacent. So I think that's what really makes it, you know, it's such a interesting place, and it's just evolving so quickly as well.
Now, as usual this week, has anybody said to you, okay, no more Twitter talk and no more Swede talk?
No, people love the Swedes.
They love the Swedes.
They love the Swedes. I have had no complaints about Sweden.
We had a Swede on our Security Now podcast, actually.
I know. You know, it was
she was
so
great.
Funny.
Yeah.
I tuned in at that moment because all I heard you say was, I think that your English is better than ours or something.
And you knew immediately I was talking to a Swede.
I kind of guessed it, actually, Leo. The Swedes do a lot of things well, I think. By the way, there's no one Swedish in my family at all, so there's no self-interest here in talking about Sweden. But I did just want to mention that last week we talked about Robyn.com, Robyn.com, who's an artist out of Sweden, and she was profiled in Wired magazine as the anti-Britney Spears. Now, I read the article 2 weeks ago. Turned out she was in Toronto last night. I saw the concert, so I got to see her play at the Phoenix, which is a pretty small venue. I thought she was amazing. She has great stage presence. She's like this funky kind of punk girl with this crazy haircut, blonde kind of short cropped in the back and kind of longer on one side. And she's an amazing dancer. I loved it. She was really, really good. So it was fun to, you know, discover an artist so quickly and then figure out they were playing in your own backyard. So I had a good time. And it was funny because not to bring up that site again, but I had mentioned on that site that I was going to the concert and a couple of people wrote back and said, oh, I'm going to be there too. And I thought, I'm not going to meet any of these people who are on Twitter. What are the chances? And sitting on the balcony upstairs, all of a sudden, this girl turns to me. She goes, are you Amber? And
oh my
the whole
gosh.
Time I was sitting beside this girl who had messaged me on Twitter, and we just happened to be beside each other. So very, very funny.
Oh my gosh. That's amazing.
I know. Isn't that funny?
It just, yeah. All right. No more Twitter talk. We're done.
We're done. We have to move on to something else, Leo, because we should mention we don't have a guest today, but we have lots of content to talk about, lots of links.
Yeah, because the Webby Awards came out. Now, you were a Webby judge back in 98, 99?
I think it was in 1999. And when I was asked to be a Webby judge, the only reason I was involved is there was an ad on Craigslist that said we're looking for people to judge the Webby Awards. And I was, I don't know how old, but not very old. And I thought, oh, wow, maybe I can earn $50. I had no idea the impact of it. I remember sitting in a room with about 30 people who had found this ad on Craigslist, and we were in the Webby Awards office, which is down, I think, is that South Park in San Francisco? That little neighborhood?
Not to be confused with South Park, the TV show. South Park is a beautiful little, tiny little plot of green surrounded by very hip businesses and, of course, really nice restaurants for the really hip businesses to go to.
Yeah, so I was in a meeting down there with a bunch of people, and I was working at Razorfish at the time, and I had no idea the Webby Awards would be as big as they were, and it turned into a really big thing. And I was at, I think we already talked about this before, I was at the award show at the top of Nob Hill in, is it Huntington Square, maybe, or something like that? It was a kind of the Webby Awards, the actual ceremony.
Yeah, it's the big Masonic.
They had the after party.
It's the big Masonic auditorium, and then across the after party was. Kind of part of Grace Cathedral in that square there. Yeah.
That's where it was. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Now it's huge. and they just came out, and I'm curious, Leo, because I saw you say something online today about the Webby Awards and you seem kind of displeased with them.
Well, all right. Let me tell you what I think. When I look through the list of the Webby nominations, I just feel like these guys are a little out of touch. First of all, there's a lot of mainstream media, far too much. And I think I have to think that the judges these days are a bunch of, you know, social networking marketing gurus who are very mainstream media focused. So that's one thing that I kind of felt like, especially now I felt that way more with the nominations than maybe with the choices. I also remember when we talked about the nominations, there are way too many categories. I mean, it's like they want to include every website. And yet so many websites that I think are great are not on this list. I almost wonder, you know, who is on this list? I mean, why do they have an insurance category? Law.
But I wonder about best copywriting. Like, who cares?
Yeah. It doesn't, you know, to me, the web isn't about, I guess for some people, the web is all about marketing, sales, promoting your company. And so, you know, for instance, the newspaper sites, nominees are the New York Times, the Guardian, the Independent, the Wall Street Journal, and Variety. Don't you think there are better newspaper sites out there than those?
Yes, I do. And that's, I think that's the interesting thing is it has become really corporate. I do remember judging it in 99 and I remember going through all the different sites and I had three categories, which were like news and media, health and lifestyle. And there was I can't remember the third category, but you know, they were all websites that you probably had never heard of.
And it was all cutting edge.
You were in the industry.
That's exactly it. I want to see sites on here I've never heard of. These are the obvious choices. Now, some may say, well, you're bitter, Leo, because you're not in the podcast section. And I look at who the podcasts are. It's TED, which is the Webby Award winner, People's Voice winner, The Onion. Okay, those are both great sites. I don't know if I would, you know, then The Guardian, How Stuff Works, National Gallery of Art. These seem too mainstream and big to me. I'd like to see more edgy, personal stuff on here all around, you know?
Well, I think what's happened with the awards, and I've noticed this just following them over the past few years, is I always go to them when we look at, you know, best navigation or best layout for a website because there's some interesting web design ideas there. But what I find a lot is it's the same websites every year. I'd love to chart the main categories and you'd find the same websites. Like, I know The Onion is great. You know, it's a fantastic
site. We don't have to give them an award anymore.
I know Flickr is great. But what I want to see is, you know, hey, the Webby Awards for 2008 should have some component of what's new and what's innovative on the web. And when I look at this, I just see what's kind of old and stale ways.
To me, it looks like it's been co-opted. Especially, I mean, there's a real estate section, insurance section. To me, professional services, pharmaceuticals. Why are we giving Webby Awards in those categories? That doesn't even make sense.
Yeah, and you're right, I think, too. It has become really corporate. And if you're sort of in the industry at all and you're aware of what's happening on the web, for example, they have the best navigation category. And Apple is one of the nominees and I think even winners in this category. They win all the time. But I'd argue on the web, you know, there's really new creative ways to do navigation online that should be winning awards. There's this crazy toilet site that actually Tony Robbins had passed an email off to someone that had very innovative navigation. I posted it on ambermac.com.
I remember
you had
that.
People talking heads and you rolled over their heads. And I'm not saying that's the best way to do navigation, but you know, there has to be some forward thinking and innovation going on in these awards, because what you see right now is just, it's just the same thing as last year that just hasn't changed a lot.
Well, I don't know. I mean, there are some sites on here that are very good still. I mean, and there are some edgy, oddball ones out of nowhere. And I just like to see more of that. There are 70 categories, 70 categories.
Yeah, it's crazy. I think you're right. I think they have to do some of the more corporate mainstream websites, but what would be nice is to focus more on the smaller community websites. I mean, just like you would in, in the movie industry where you have sort of independent films, it's almost as though there needs to be a category for independent producers. So you're not competing. Right. You know, I can't compete as a blogger or video podcaster against, you know, some of these huge companies. And so it just there's sort of a almost like an unfair advantage there.
Well, all right. So maybe we need a second Webby Awards for the Edge, the Webby Edge Awards. Maybe this has just become too mainstream. By the way, our friend Kevin Rose nominated for Best Practices and won the what they call it, the People's Voice Award for Best Practices.
I don't even. Is that for Dig?
Yeah, for Dig. But what is Best Practices? I'm not sure what that even means.
I have no idea.
Best practices.
I have no idea what that means. But I'm guessing it has something to do maybe with the community involvement on Dig, perhaps?
I guess. Flickr was number one, which, frankly, I don't agree with. I don't think Flickr is very well done or very easy to navigate. It gets the job done, and I love it. And those of us who have grown up with Flickr know how to use it. But, boy, when I try to show it to somebody else, it is not obvious. Facebook, Flickr, Dig, TheNewYorkTimes.com, and Yelp. Whatever. And the other thing I think that kind of is telling is they say the nominees, and then the credits are for agency or credited organization. But really, yeah. Agency tells you something. This is what these are about.
Oh, you don't have an agency doing
my agency doesn't do my blog.
Do.
Yeah, you do. You probably do.
No.
You are the agency.
Yeah, exactly. No, I don't, Leo. That was my failed attempt at sarcasm. You know, every time I try to be sarcastic or mean.
You seem too nice to be actually sarcastic. We believe you.
It never materializes.
We believe you.
It never comes across how I want it to come across. Stephen Colbert is being honored. I love Stephen Colbert, I have to say.
Oh, he's so funny.
I don't know if he's speaking there, but he's being honored there. And if he shows up, I have to get a ticket to the Webby Awards.
It'd be worth it just to see him.
Yeah,
when we saw it, it was, that great actor from Cabaret, Cumming.
Alan Cumming.
Alan Cumming was the host, and he was great.
Yeah. He was really good. He was
really
very, very funny.
Yeah.
But Stephen Colbert would be great. And there was I just wanted to mention the Special Achievement Award for the Yes, We Can video, which I'm sure you've seen with the speech by Barack Obama.
This is the one. Let me just play a little bit of it because it'll ring a bell. People will remember this.
It was a creed written into the founding.
It's the Obama speech, and then various artists talking along with it, saying, yes, we can. I think he abandoned that. I don't hear him say, yes, we can anymore.
Does he still do that?
It's a very inspiring video. A lot of people mocked
that video.
A lot of people mocked it.
Yeah, you know what that happens when you get something that's become so popular, I think, is when you have someone mocking it, and you know, in some ways it almost says that you're a little bit successful.
Right, you're doing well, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, it's very inspirational. I haven't heard him say yes, we can recently at all.
You should go back to that speech. That worked for him.
It really did. And when I watched that video, I just watched it again today. And for anyone who wants to find it, it's on YouTube. Just look up Yes, We Can by Will I Am, I think.
Oh, Will I Am did that. That's right. Yeah. He's going to be at the awards. Now I understand where the connection is.
Yeah, he's going to be at the awards as well. But it's an amazing, really inspirational video to watch. And I think it's had more than 7 million views on YouTube already.
Wow.
And, it reminded me of, you know, the fact that Barack Obama is such a good speaker. You know, we sometimes don't get a chance to see him speak or say anything because it's just, you know, you get political pundits arguing on TV about, you know, minute little issues. So,
right.
It's been a while since.
All we've seen is Reverend Wright. All we've seen is him defend himself against Reverend Wright.
Yeah, exactly.
What do you think, as a Canadian watching from outside, what do you think the impact of things like these Yes We Can videos and the web in general and Facebook groups and online fundraising, what do you think the impact is on the U.S. election? Has it been significant?
I think so, for sure. I mean, in Canada, what I find, at least, is that there are very few politicians who are using the web in any type of way that has an impact at all. And so what I find is looking to the States is that, you know, from using Facebook or Twitter or MySpace or whatever sites it may be, or blogging, is that, it really helps to open up the conversation and discuss issues. Because what happens when you watch mainstream news, and I watch CNN all the time and other newscasts, and I feel as though they never talk about the issues. They just harp on, did this person screw up, or who's in in the lead, but they never discuss exactly what, you know, people should care about when they're talking about someone running for office. And so you have to turn to the web to really get that information.
But you
and
can
to really engage in that dialogue.
You actually can finally find out. You can go to at least go to a candidate's website and maybe other third party websites, and you can learn stuff that you couldn't learn otherwise.
Yeah, you really can, because what happens with a lot of the mainstream news is that they just sort of gloss over any of these issues, and they gloss over any type of conversation, and they just focus on who screwed up and you know, what scandal's going on now, and how's this other person tearing this other person apart, and it's almost like they're so dumb they can't even articulate what the issues are actually about and talk about them in an intelligent manner. I know on CNN recently they were doing a political panel, but all of the people on the panel are their senior correspondents on politics. So you had three CNN panelists who all work for CNN, and all I'm thinking is, you know, you get some bloggers on there, get some different people on there, because this seems like a ridiculous way to debate an issue, to have people from your internal organization there, you know, spouting off the same sort of story that we hear every day from even just the anchors on CNN. So, well, I'm pretty opinionated about this stuff.
I think we all are, and I think the good news is, and the encouraging news is that, you know, this is a point we keep kind of harp on all the time, but it empowers the viewer now to get the news themselves, to find out what's going on. They're not tied to this monologue coming from the networks and the mainstream media. The spin that they put on it, yeah, it's influential, and unfortunately, still the vast majority of voters get their news from those sources. But if you care and you want to find out more and you want to hear the opposing viewpoints, the dialogue that goes on the net, it's not an echo chamber. There's a lot, you know, you hear a lot and you can find out a lot and you can get a lot of information and I think become a better voter as a result of it.
I totally agree.
Do you worry, though, and sometimes I've heard this criticism and I sometimes think it's true, that people will kind of tend to read or view, or I mean, certainly happens in television news, the people who have the same bias that they do, so they won't hear opposing viewpoints on the net?
I don't know. In some ways, I kind of disagree with that, because I don't think there's any way that you can read about views that you agree with without seeing some comments online that disagree with those views. So you can't really hide from it on the internet as much as you could from, say, watching TV.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a lot more debate that goes on. So even if you go to a site that you read all the time that is in line with your political views, you're definitely going to find comments or links to other sites that are directly in sort of opposition of those particular views. So, I don't think it's perfect by any means, but I do think it's a better medium to be able to discuss politics. And I don't think mainstream media does a very good job of it.
So I guess that would mean that, and this is, I want to emphasize this and kind of send a message out. When you do comment in opposition on a blog, instead of just saying you're full of it, you're an idiot, you're a jerk, put substantive stuff in there. Make a good argument. You're representing the opposite point of view. If you really care about this opposing point of view, you should go to these liberal blogs if you're a conservative, or go to conservative blogs if you're a liberal, and make coherent, cogent arguments, not get in flame wars, but add to the dialogue, right?
Yeah, I totally agree. You know, it's so interesting. I was visiting with my parents in Florida a month or so ago, and my dad, who just started using the internet a few years ago and still types with just two fingers, he was on MSNBC, and he's a very political guy, and he's always reading about politics online and watching the news. And he was on MSNBC writing a comment on the blog, his first comment ever that he ever posted on a blog. And it was very long. It was like a couple of paragraphs. And it was amazing to me. I'm looking at my dad, who is 62 years old and who a couple of years ago wouldn't even know that you could comment on a blog. And he was just in there debating with people. And I thought, wow, if this can inspire my dad to get involved in the conversations, and he feels as though, you know, he's had his say, and this was all American politics and my dad's Canadian, I thought, you know, that's an amazing feat.
No kidding. It really is. And that's exciting. And I bet you that Mr. MacArthur's post was erudite, well thought out, well argued, and he made good points.
Oh, he learned from the best, Leo. Come on.
I would really like to kind of, you know, unfortunately, some of the dialogue on the net has degenerated. I mean, it's no worse than it's been ever since it started. I mean, flame wars are nothing new, but it would be really nice if intelligent people, even if you disagree, could disagree in an informative, creative, valuable way. You know, try to be persuasive. Try to persuade the other guy, you know, say, well, let me give you the reasons why I feel this way. I actually enjoy the reading that kind of commentary.
I totally agree. And that's always been one of my issues, even with Dig, for example. I remember a few years ago, I remember chatting with Kevin Rose just on Instant Messenger, and he was saying, this is when Dig kind of started, and he was just asking for my feedback on the usability side of the site. And he had said to me, you know, hey, do you have any ideas for the site? And I said, well, can I have a version of Dig where I don't have any comments? To me, the comments were routinely so offensive that it didn't add value to the post at all. So, you know, when you can have a conversation that's a little more intelligent, and I think, you know, there's some really good threads of dialogue that can happen on some of these sites that, you know, are more interesting to read in the first place than even the article.
Yeah. You know, in fact, it's funny that you said that to Kevin way back when, because of course, the intervening 3 or 4 years, that's all Dig has worked on, is ways to make it more possible to hide bad comments and to kind of improve the quality of the comments. I think it's probably their single biggest problem, maybe that in gaming Dig, but it's true on YouTube too. You don't ever want to read the comments on a YouTube video. Start dumb and they go to stupid and they don't ever get better.
I think YouTube might even be worse, actually.
Oh, it's the worst anywhere. It's appalling.
Yeah, because at least with Dig, I feel as though there is a foundation of a community there who will kind of stick up for people and police a little bit. Whereas on YouTube, I could be wrong, but the community there just seems so big that it's just completely unmanageable. And
there is no community.
Don't have the policing. There is no community.
I think that's a problem Dig may face as it gets bigger and bigger and bigger, that the community gets fractured or maybe, you know, starts to feel less cohesive. And that's the problem with YouTube. It's so big. But boy, that's what makes Wikipedia, for instance, work, is there's this sense of community and pride in the content, and people care about it. And so they protect it. They garden it. They groom it. And Dig needs that, too. I think any community that's going to succeed needs that. And YouTube, I guess it's just too late. It's just too darn big.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. It's funny. I was at an event, I think last week, and I was talking to someone, Austin Hill. He's an entrepreneur in Canada, and he was talking about one site. I can't remember the name of it, but they did commenting in a different way where, if comments were considered, offensive, if it had so many votes as being offensive, the comment was actually collapsed. So the comment was still there, but you had to expand it to see it. And he used this as an example of one site that was not really, you know, they're not really policing comments, but they're allowing the community to moderate those comments so that they collapse if they have enough votes to be deemed offensive. So, I think more systems like that will come into play, and then there'll be better ways to moderate what we see, because sometimes it gets a little out of control.
I was playing with, and I'll probably use on the radio show site, the radio show that I do, we had a wiki, and it was exactly the problem of too much success, too diverse a community, not enough people feeling pride in it. So it just degenerated into spam and vileness. And so we had to basically turn off the public commenting. But I want to bring it back. And so I'm looking at, this is an interesting new switch on the internet, these Web 2.0 commenting sites. And the one I tried, and there are a number of them, but the one I tried is Disqus, DISQUS.com. And I have very high hopes for sites like this. There are a couple of others like Disqus, and actually I'll try them all before I decide. But I was really impressed. So here's what you get. So, and by the way, it's easy to turn this on a WordPress blog. I did it in about 3 seconds. It's just a plugin. So that instead of using the native WordPress commenting system, you use Disqus. Now, the disadvantage, and the reason I don't want to leave it on right now, is that all your blog's comments are off-site. You no longer kind of own them. But that's also its advantage, because as a commenter, people can follow your comments cross-blog. So people could subscribe to Amber MacArthur's comments on a bunch of different blogs. There's a feed from Disqus of all your comments, as long as everybody uses Disqus. There are also rating systems and karma, which I think is really important. People could say thumbs up or thumbs down to you. And that really helps, I think, keep the community solid. There are a lot of neat features to it. I think we're going to probably use this on the Tech Guy site, just because it encourages this kind of community, right?
Definitely.
It becomes very important. There's a couple of others like it. I'm trying to remember the names off the top of my head. When I played with Disqus, a number of people sent me emails saying, oh, you know, you should take a look at some of these other ones as well. But I was very impressed. I think we'll probably use it. I don't want to use it on like, say, my blog or Twit, because I want to keep whole. I don't want to give up the comments.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I'm not sure exactly what to do about that. I don't want them to become, you know how I am. I mean, I was on Vox for a while and then it scared me because my stuff was all in somebody else's.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I totally understand that. Yeah. I think there'll be more and more sort of interesting tools to be able to manage all the commenting. And I think, you know, the whole conversation on the web, it's just going to get to be a bigger focus point as time goes on and more important. So there'll be better ways to moderate all of it.
We should get the Discus people on. I'll try to do that for the show. So just talk about why, what their motivation was and what the idea is. It kind of goes against what you think of as a blog is somebody's posts and then the blog community, you know, the AmberMac.com community commenting on it. And then that's this very tight community. This idea is a little more horizontal, you know, that the community is cross blog. And I think that in some ways that's neat. That's it is kind of more the modern web. Why should we don't want these silos, these closed, you know, there is an AmberMac community, but it should have bridges to other communities as well.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah, totally agree.
And if AmberMac and Leoville.com and a few other sites all use this Discus, for instance, then it'd be a joint community. And when I talk to bloggers, I spoke at Blog World last year. I'm going to do it again this year, by the way, in September in Vegas. And that was one of the things I said to the bloggers is always, you know, be thinking of how you can build bridges to other communities. Don't think of it just as your community. That's great. That's a wonderful start. But if you're going to grow, you have to build bridges and expand to other ones.
Definitely. This is a good segue, Leo. I know we don't need to have so many good segues, but this is a good one into our next link. This is called the decknetwork.net. Now, I came across this on a web designer site, and I know Z Frank, for example, is part of this network. And the idea is it's a very kind of exclusive advertising network for reaching web and design professionals.
It's so exclusive, I can't get into it. It's down right now.
Oh, is it down right now? Yeah. Oh, no. Oh, yeah. Well, I'm sure that's it'll be up soon enough. But
that's exclusive, boy. You can't do it on the regular internet. So,
I know.
So what is it?
Well, it kind of confused me at first, to be honest with you. The only reason I'm particularly interested in it is I know that there's a lot of people out there who want to figure out how to make money off the web, as whether you're an independent publisher or you're producing video content. And so it's a network that you work with them, and there are 25 ads per month that are put in rotation on 29 sites that are currently part of the network. Now, there's only one ad usually put on each of these sites. As far as I understand it, it's 120 pixels by 90 pixels from one of these different 25 companies that have agreed to advertise within this network. And what I was really interested about is obviously they're trying to target a very specific group of people. So in this case, all of the web and design professionals, and that would include, people, I'm trying to think of some of the people in the network, but people we've probably talked about on the show before who are developing Web 2.0 sites. And they also talk about their ad rates. And this is something that you don't see published on the web all the time, but their ad rates are $6,400 per ad per month for this little ad that goes on all these different blogs. So I just bring it up as another example of sort of creative advertising that's happening online, and also just to get your opinion as well. Do you think advertising is going to go so super niche that, you know, here a company comes and their ad is going to appear only, you know, on one of 25 websites that have been pre-selected?
But that's already happened. That's what FM was all about. John Battelle's FM. Which Federated Media, which, you know, started with just a very few, you know, Boing Boing, I think Dig was initially, no longer is, but a few of the biggest kind of blog sites. And that was it. And I think it was just about 25 initially.
Yeah.
And the idea being that if you are this group, that you then can go to an advertiser and say, look, this is handpicked, top of the line or whatever. This is, you know, only the best. Part of the reason I think advertisers are a little skittish about advertising online or on a podcast, especially, or MySpace, is they don't trust the environment.
Mm-hmm.
So they're a little nervous about where their ads are going to be.
Yep, I totally agree with you. That's a big thing. And so if they have the information up front about where the ad will be displayed, there's probably that comfort level immediately increases. And also if there's a number of people who have come together and they're not just relying on like one blogger who might go haywire and post something negative online.
Right. Well, and I think that's exactly what happens when we try to pitch ads is people go, what's going to happen? What are you going to be talking about when your ad happens? And I have to say, a couple of times, you know, for instance, we had an Audible ad, and Cory Doctorow, in the middle of the Audible ad, kind of went off on Audible's copy protection. And that was a tough moment for me, because I want to let Cory talk. I kind of agree with, you know, Cory's position on DRM. I know he's a little bit more aggressive about it than I am. But I don't want to censor him. But at the same time, I'm also feeling the pain for the advertiser who's sitting there saying, well, this isn't what we paid for. And so it's very, very difficult. It's a very tricky situation to be in. By the way, I am now number one on Twitter. I just want to mention.
Obama
won North Carolina, but I won Twitter. Okay, just want to mention.
Oh, wow, Leo. I don't know if you can compare the two, but I'm willing to work with you and support you on this one.
Thank you. It's not quite the same, is it? Not to be distracted, but that is, I think, the number one thing that people who are trying to get advertising have to kind of deal with. And I think advertisers need to deal with it, because I think one of the things that makes it a good platform, the web or a podcast, is its authenticity and the attachment of its listeners to the product. And my feeling was, look, people listen because they know we're being honest. And if that's part of the honesty, so be it. This isn't a controlled environment, I admit it. And I think that scares advertisers a little bit, but it's also the future, frankly.
Yeah.
And if you want to reach an audience, you got to be as honest as everybody else is, right? You can't, you know, and you have to acknowledge these things.
I can't remember what site it was on, but recently there was a report that came out that measured podcast advertisements against mainstream, I think, television advertisements, and they measured the recall rate. And the recall rate within podcasts, I want to say, was 7 times higher than the recall rate on television.
Yeah.
And I think we might have talked about this before, but it's so true, because I always remember the advertisers within a podcast or what advertisers, podcasters work with, even if it was, you know, could have been a negative thing they said about the advertiser in a moment of just being honest. But there is that recognition, and there is that sort of transparency, and it's always more authentic, I think, and then can be of more value to the advertiser themselves. So once they get over that hurdle, I think it will be good for all of us in this space.
I'm back to number two. Obama's back number one. For one brief shining second.
How did that happen?
Well, because both of us are gaining followers, in real time, practically. So,
whoa.
That's fine with me. But we're neck and neck.
This
I'm at 28,739 and 28,740 for the Barack. So would you please follow me, and then we'll be okay.
Leo will be able to sleep at night if you follow him. Yeah, this is very important.
I don't, you know, it's like, I know people, it drives people crazy. I don't want to talk about it. It's an obsession of those of us who use it, and there's no reason why anybody else should have to suffer it. It's like, you know, when you hang out, I don't know if this ever happened to you, but when you hang out with a bunch of heroin junkies and all they want to talk about is scoring, it's like that.
I gotta go, Leo. this is a PG podcast, and I just want to tell Audible that I don't hang out with heroin junkies.
No, so neither do I.
Call me
neither
after the
I.
show.
I'm just joking. Hey, let us mention audible.com, because they are our sponsor, and we love them. We really do. Audible, of course, is a place where you can get audio. Well, I want to say audiobooks, but it's not. It's not just audiobooks. It's a huge variety of stuff you can listen to. I mean, they even have podcasts, they have radio shows, they have speeches. Sometimes they'll put up political speeches, they'll put debates online. I mean, it's a really great source. If you listen to podcasts, it's kind of a natural that you would want to know more about audible.com. For 10 years, they've been kind of laboring in the wilderness to bring us audiobooks. I remember when I first started listening to audiobooks on that long commute to Tech TV, and I would rent these cassettes. You get 20 cassettes in a box. You have 1 month to listen to them. You're jamming them in. And now it's so easy. I find a book I want. I go to audible.com. I choose from 45,000 titles. It's almost too many to choose from. I'm browsing. I'm looking. There's all sorts of great stuff. And then I pick it. I click it. And it's on my iPod, or it's on my iPhone, or I burn a CD. And you've got it. It's just a really great way to read. And I know sometimes people don't like it when I say read, but I think of it as reading. Just some wonderful stuff on here. There's a book that I actually found out about. You loved 6 Feet Under, didn't you? The TV show.
Oh, love it. Yes.
Wasn't that a great book? On the last season, the mom, I think the daughter gave a gift to the mom. The book was about a family of undertakers. That's why it was called 6 Feet Under. And it was wonderful, wonderful story. I missed that show. It was a great show. Of course, the star of it has gone on to Dexter, and I've been watching that, and I know you love Dexter, and so he's just great. But at one point, the daughter gives her mom a book called Stiff. Have you seen this book? The Curious Lives of Human Cadavers.
No, I haven't. It's actually
weird and, believe it or not, funny. It is a fascinating, fascinating read. It's a little macabre, but not so much. I mean, if you like 6 Feet Under, you could deal with it. It's not that gruesome, but it is a wonderful book. Barry Roach wrote it. Shelley Fraser narrates it. 508 ratings on this, and it's a 4.1, which is a very high rating on Audible.com. It means people love it. It's an Alex Award winner for 2004, which means it's a great read, and I highly recommend it. So that's I'm going to make that our recommendation for our book. You had one too?
No, I don't. I just want to ask you to do something with our recommendations on Audible. Can you explain to people just in detail how they can get this book on Audible? Someone asked me this the other day and I explained it to them and I realized that they can go to, you know, the URL they can go to and then just, you know, tell them how easy it is because we assume that people know how to
get these.
Yeah, audiobooks. But someone asked me the other day, and so I had to go through it with them. So I thought we need to talk about this on the show.
Absolutely true. And I'll walk you through it here. It's pretty straightforward. For the first thing you got to do is go to audible.com/Knight, N-I-G-H-T. And that's if you're not a member. You do have to be a member of Audible to get these books. They're not free, although they have free content. So there are a lot of free things on here. Like when the debates happen, you can download the debates for free. I remember... the Al Gore concession speech was on there in 2000. So you can download the stuff and listen to it. In fact, that's still there. It's still a great speech to listen to. So you can do that. But the books usually cost some money. Most of the time, less than the book would actually cost to buy. And you own it, by the way. Unlike these rentals where I had to return them, you never have to return this. You can listen to it over and over again. I have over 300 books in my library. And I often re-listen because they're great. So go to audible.com/Knight and sign up. Now, when you do that, and you'll have to give them a credit card. When you do that, you will get a credit towards a book. So that's why we always recommend books on these shows because, you know, that's like what we're saying. Hey, you want to join Audible and you'll get a free book, right? So it's a good way to start. And here's what we think, you know, here's a book you might like. So when you do that, okay, now you get credits. And now there's different ways to do it. And there's different ways to sign up. But if you do this, you have to decide if you want to pay a monthly fee or a yearly fee, and you get a certain number of books a month. There are just various ways to do it, or various credits or so forth. But ultimately, you'll be able to, or just buy books ad hoc. You know, so if you think, oh, I might do a couple of books a year, that'd probably be the way to do it. Once you buy the book, it's added to your library. You have a My Library. And you can click that link and you download it. And now there is copy protection. People should know that it's very minimal. It's actually similar to the iTunes copy protection scheme. So it's you could put it on a number of computers. You have to authorize the computer. iTunes works with it. There's also an Audible client if you want to use that. You authorize the client and then it can download it and then it can copy it to any device. So I put them on iPods. You can put them on, you know, the Sansas, almost all portable players. Weirdly enough, not the Zune. I don't know what Microsoft's thinking, but almost every other portable player. You can also burn CDs just like you can with iTunes. You can burn a standard CD and play that in your car. A lot of people listen on their computer, but I like it on a portable device. I put it on an iPod. And then when I'm exercising or driving, I listen and these books are great. Now, the nice thing about the iPod is, and any device that plays is it remembers where you left off. So when you stop listening, you pick it up and write it where you left off. And the thing is, you own that book. So you can go back to your library. I just downloaded a bunch of books that I hadn't listened to in ages. Thought these would be fun to have again. So you can always go back. Your library expands. It's just a really great way to read. I don't know. That's probably more detail than you needed, but.
No. I think it's good because, you know, sometimes I think we gloss over it. Just like, go there, get the book. And then it's one of those things where someone had asked me and I thought, you know what, we should just sort of, you know, talk through the process of how you do it, because there are those people who, you know, as much as they're kind of techie, maybe they've never downloaded a book before. Right. They don't understand like all that. They think they can just go there and get it for free and, right, like on the site, like on the page. So I just wanted to make sure we talked.
You have to have a you have to have a membership and they use your credit card and so forth. But it's, you know, I'll tell you what, I literally do two or three books, even now when I'm not commuting, two or three books a month. I just, it's one of many ways I read. It doesn't replace paper books for me, but it's really, really nice.
You know, Leo, during that whole, just before that explanation, you said, I pick it, I click it. And then all I'm thinking is I hear it. Like, I feel like Audible is going to
okay,
come out with
there
this
we go. Let me
campaign.
Write that down. I pick it, I click it, I hear it. I say
in
I read
voice.
It. I read it. I'm going out to I've met Don Katz once at a podcast expo. He's the president of Audible, the founder. He thought the whole thing up. But I'm going to go out to, they're in Newark, New Jersey, go fly out and visit with them in a couple of weeks.
Cool.
Just because I feel like I ought to go out there and say hi. They've been, they have been so supportive of our network. I mean, and as I said, it's not easy getting a big company like that to believe in podcasts, to trust us to deliver an ad. And I think we've shown them, and you know, they advertise now on a number of podcasts. I think we've shown them that this medium works, and it works really, really well for them. So I just want to thank them and thank you, because I know we have many Audible customers now in our audience. Audible.com/net@night. Anything else we want to talk about? Because
I know we're kind of running out of time. I just have two quick things if we have time.
Oh, we have you know what? For you, Amber. Just we'll keep talking for all night long.
Okay. I have three then. No, I'll make them quick though. The first one
I'm not in a hurry at all.
Okay. I feel like, you know, it's 8 o'clock. I feel like we're sort of doing, you know,
you got to understand.
Hard stop.
I now sit here in front of this camera 5 or 6 hours a day. When we're done here, I'll probably talk some more.
Leo, I understand because I'm watching. As awkward as that may be.
No, it's not awkward. I hope all the geeks and all my friends will watch. And more than that, I hope they'll participate. I can't, you know, it's okay, but we're going to get to your stuff in a second. But I just want to say, and I know I've been talking for it nonstop, but this is so early on. And I don't know if people really understand what this is going to be like. But right now, it's just me and a camera or you and a camera right now. And what it's really going to be is, we're all together and I'm going to take Skype calls with anybody and, you know, chat. And it's going to be, I don't want this to be me in front of a camera talking at you. I want this to be a party and you're going to come up, I hope, but anybody who's watching will be able to call in and participate. This is going to be us geeking out 6 days a week.
I love it.
That's
my
plan anyway.
Yeah, I think it's a very good plan. So to continue the geek out, oh, by the way, worst segue ever into Audible. We went from heroin to, dead people. I don't know. It was
see what
awkward.
I mean by being grateful to Audible for putting up with us?
I know. I was listening to it. I was thinking, this is odd. And I hope they know there's something good coming
they
here.
They do know that.
So three links that I wanted to mention. Now, the first one, I have a bit of a disclaimer because this person is a friend of mine, Layla, who you've met. She's from edayinc.com.
Oh, I love
in Toronto.
Her. Yeah, Layla Bujnani. We had her on the TV show a couple of times.
Oh, she's so wonderful. She's just this amazing, charismatic woman from France, and she's just got oodles of energy. She's unbelievably smart, and her company has just launched a site called tineye.com. That's T-I-N-E-Y-E.com. The reason I'm mentioning it is, number one, it's an amazing search engine for images. It's invite-only right now, but you can go there and request an invitation.
Oh, this is what she was doing when she came on the show. She showed us how they can recognize faces.
Exactly. And so, and images on the internet. So, you know, they've been working on this tool for years and years and years. Initially, they had built up the technology so it would work with corporate customers, but now they're opening it up to consumers for anyone to use. So like a giant search engine that will be free to the masses. And I did a quick little how-to video for them this weekend because they had called up and said that they needed someone to come and help them figure out how to explain the site. You can find that on ambermac.com if you want to see how it works. But what it does is, for instance, if you have an image, you upload the image to tineye.com. It searches, I think it's 500 million images right now. And I mean, the search is fast within just a few seconds.
So you give them not a search term, you give them a picture.
Yeah, you give them a picture,
Okay.
or you give them a link to a picture. What it does is their engine actually takes that picture and it finds out where that picture, that exact picture, has appeared on other sites across the internet or similar pictures to that image that you are searching on. So
wow.
it uses
now,
just
it's an invite only. How do we get on? How do we do it?
Well, I'm not going to say it. I sent you an invite earlier today.
Oh, good. Thank
just
you.
So you know, I only have a few invites left, and I totally regret saying that right now. But hopefully we'll have more. But just go to tineye.com, request an invitation. And I'm mentioning it just because I think it is going to kind of change the way that people search for images. I think it's going to be one of those sites out there that is just very innovative. Imagine if you're a photographer, you want to know where your images have appeared. And there's a bunch of other uses for it. And it's super fast and super slick. So that's one link I wanted to mention. I think you'll probably hear more about that in the next few weeks. I also wanted to mention that Amanda Cogdon has a new series out called Sometimes Daily. And I'm mentioning this because we've covered Amanda in the past. I don't have much to say about
this series.
Did you
watch that teaser?
Yes. And this is the thing, is Leo, I don't want to spend...
What the heck is that all about?
Exactly. And I have to really refrain from saying...
Because you're very competitive with her.
Well, it's not that I'm competitive with her. It's just that I sometimes get disappointed and
I'm competitive with Kevin.
I know. No, it's. I guess you're right. But it's not just with her. I feel competitive at, you know, a certain level with women on the internet who tend to do videos where it's less about education and more about, it's got more sexual kind of comments in it. And this one in particular is a teaser for Sometimes Daily. And she's a really sweet woman. And the thing is that I looked at this, I was really excited to see what she was doing next. I don't really understand it. Maybe it's just not my humor. It will appeal to other people, but it really,
okay. I'm going to say it because I don't want you to say it. It's supposed to be sketch comedy, right? Her brother there, and there's a couple other women. It wasn't funny. And the thing ended up being about Amanda's chest and
yeah.
nothing else, which frankly, I got to say, is the way it's been for everything she's done. And I don't wish her ill, but you know, I read one thing, I think it was on TechCrunch, where it said Amanda was the first great woman star on the internet. And it made me went, because I don't think she's representative, exactly what you said, of the great women who are on the internet, including you, who aren't, you know, who are doing stuff that's quality. It's interesting. You know, I mean, you know me, I tell everybody you should all be doing a podcast. You know, if that's what moves you, go ahead. If you find an audience, that's great. And I don't want to slander her and say that she shouldn't be doing it. She should be doing it. It is a shame that so many people feel like in some way this is a bellwether of what's going on, because it ain't.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's always been my issue with it in particular. I mean, I don't, you know, I love TechCrunch and I go there all the time, but oftentimes when they talk about women in the video blogging space or video podcasting, there's a whole lot of sex appeal that rises up to the top.
It's too much about sex. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's less people like, you know, Veronica Belmont, who's really smart and really amazing and really geeky. You know, Natalie Del Conte is great too. I mean, there
are a lot of beautiful women on camera, including yourself, but for whom that isn't the point.
Yes, exactly.
And in a way, and you know, I always told you to dress down. I didn't have to work too hard on you. You that was your normal instinct. But I always said, dress down. I remember, you know, Callie was on, the first time Callie was on the show, she wore something a little low cut. And I said, Callie, please don't, because we don't want it to be about your boobs.
Yeah.
We want it to be about your brains. You've got great brains, great talent. It's unfortunately, especially for younger women, I think it's very tempting to go that route. And you know me, I've said this many times to you and to others. You know, that's fine if that's what you want to play off of, but it's kind of short-sighted. Better to play off your brains. I tell my daughter.
I totally agree.
Too. Yeah.
And you know what? I completely agree with you. And that's not just because I don't like to get dressed up or wear makeup, but I inherently agree with you. But that's the thing, when I saw this new series, is that I went to a link. I had sent you this link as well. There's a video on Flickr for this series. And they talk about, there's some little sketch about global warming and about the environment. And it's an exchange between a few of the people on set. I think there's like three women on set. And someone says, are you for or against it? And the girl's like, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. should I be, you know, just like really ditzy girls talking. And you know, here I am. I had just watched The 11th Hour. I think that's the name of the documentary that Leonardo DiCaprio had narrated, and all this great content that's coming out about global warming and how it's so important we pay attention. And then I go and see stuff like this, and I just feel infuriated. Like, I feel as though when you have people following you and you have people who are taking your advice and listening to you, then you have a responsibility in some ways to educate them a little bit or help, like, to better the world as a whole. And maybe this is very idealistic of me, but you know, in this case, I feel as though, like, just to sort of, you know, have these little sketches that, you know, aren't really funny, aren't really educating, then it just, and are very sexual in nature. I feel like, oh, you know, like, I want more content than that, you know? And I would say, like, you know, Stephen Colbert and Jon Stewart and those guys are funny, but they teach you as well at the same time. And that's a real skill to marry those two together. And if you can't do that, you need to just stick to straight content, or you need to be funny. But
I think what happened is,
none
of
these things.
When Amanda was fine on Rocket Boom, and I thought Rocket Boom was quite enjoyable, and it was a good program. And you know Andrew very well, I know.
Yeah.
In fact, he's tried to get you to work for him. But when she left and then went to CBS, I think my fear, and I know yours probably was too, was that, oh, this
or
is...
ABC, Leo. ABC. Sorry, ABC.
This is what mainstream media thinks vlogging is.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, who cares what mainstream media thinks? And we know that it's about quality. And, you know, it's fine. If you want to be cute and sexy or whatever, that's fine. But there's a lot more out there, and I have a daughter, I have a wife, I have a mother, I have a sister. I hate to see women, in media anyway. I've always hated to see women in media portrayed as sex objects. And I really think that that's what's the promise of the new media, is that we can leave those old, stupid, bad stereotypes behind.
Hear, hear. Now, Leo, this is a good segue so we can get off this topic to something kind of nice. It's Mother's Day coming up this weekend, as I'm sure you know.
Oh, and, God. Wait a minute. I better call my mom. Oh, no. I have a few days. Okay.
and I just wanted to mention this because I've used this service before to send out funny videos, happy birthday videos or whatever they might be. But Jib Jab always has these amazing video cards that you can send out, and you put your own image into them and you create a customized card. And this one, for Mother's Day, if you go to jibjab.com, they have two varieties, and they have a really fun one that talks about your mother making history and changing the world. And it's very, very cute. So if you need you should send your mom flowers, but if you need a last minute a video card,
is this where Mom Rocks came from, or is that was that a different one? Did we do that on last week? The Mom Rocks video.
I don't think so. That
didn't. Who did I do that with?
You might have done it with
Megan.
Someone else.
Megan and I did it on Jumping Monkeys. Yeah, So is that, okay. I don't know if that's the same one.
It might be the same one. Actually, Leo, that sounds kind of, it might be the name of it, but it sounds familiar. So
here's World's Greatest Mom. Let's see. Wait a minute. Okay. Oh, you record something. So
you put
your face in the movie.
Exactly. So you put your face in the movie. All you need is your, and you know what? Holy
moly.
Crap. Jib. I was going to say I was going to say holy moly, but it sounded so hokey.
No,
so
you
like,
should
crap.
Say it because you're from PEI. You don't, please, just be the same
holy
old
moly. Name.
Holy moly. You be square.
Holy moly. Okay. Just because I love user experience, Jib Jab has done this process with all of their cards where you take a picture of yourself, you upload it, so that image goes on the body of a character in these amazing videos that they've put together, and you can kind of crop your head so it perfectly cuts out your face with your hair or whatever you want to do for the particular video that you're doing. But the whole experience of creating a Jib Jab video with people you want to appear in the video is so good. They've done the best job that I've ever seen of anyone do it. I did a birthday card for someone recently where I took five images of my friend's mom and dad and my parents and all five of us and put us in the video. And it literally took me like 3 minutes to just crop out the heads using all their web-based software. And the final product is just excellent. So anyway, that's my little rave about usability, and then I'm done.
No, and I listen to you about usability. You are the king, queen, and royal jester of usability. And I agree. I just looked at it real briefly, and what was neat is I could immediately grok what was going on and able to do it. And you have to, if you're going to do something like that, because it's not just us. You've got to. That's what I mean when I talk about Flickr. We get Flickr. You know, I geeks say, well, what do you mean? Flickr's really easy to use. And I thought it was. We're talking about. I'm back to the Webby Awards. Because they won best practices, right? And I thought Flickr was easy to use until I showed it to normal people, and they said, "Well, okay, but how do I?" And they don't understand it. And so this is the problem: is geeks design websites for other geeks. And if you're going to get real people into this stuff like Jib Jab and get somebody to really send mom a card, it darn well better be intuitive.
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah. And they did a really nice job.
Good job.
So,
well done.
Happy Mother's Day to all the moms out there.
We give them the Net at Night Webby.
Yes, we do. I don't know what that is.
We call it the Netty.
The Netty.
They get a Netty.
We should have the Netty Awards in Petaluma.
Quick, register that name. You know what's going to be a problem now that we're doing stuff live? We'll think of stuff and it will be too late. By the time we get over, it'll get to the website. Somebody will have already registered that. Dang.
Yeah, that's a good point. I know it's a bit of a problem. I'm glad I can't see what's going on in the chat room or anything.
This was always a problem on the screensavers. We would have to cache a website and load up all the pages before we started talking about it, because that was a live show also, because the site would go down the minute we mentioned it, because everybody's sitting. I know how geeks are. They're sitting watching the TV with a laptop in their lap.
Yeah.
And so the minute you say, oh, we got a really good site, jibjab.com, we wouldn't be able to get on the site.
Yeah.
So we had to cache everything ahead of time.
Well, Leo, I hope you have that effect with all these live shows.
No. It's only at this point, it's only we're talking 1,000 people, not. And I think at the height of the screensaver is about 125, 100, maybe 200,000 watching.
Well, you need more bandwidth.
We need more monkeys. I am assured by all involved that if we build it and if they come, that they will, you know, handle the bandwidth. So we'll just have to wait and see. Right now, after 1,000, we start to choke. We're on Stickum right now. I think we're going to end up working with Stickum. You know, undecided still, but I think we're going to end up working with Stickum. And they are moving us to a dedicated cluster that, you know, we will have all the bandwidth they say that we can use. So we're, and you know, it's in their interest because the deal really is an ad-based deal, right? So, if the more viewers we get, the better it is for them. So
that's awesome.
I figure it's in their interest.
Amber. That's it for me, Leo. I know. I feel like that was, you know, it's so interesting because we did the show last week and it was the first time we were doing the show together using being live with video. And so we had, you know, puppets out and we were giggling and just being so immature. And today we covered so many topics.
We got serious. We got down. We got hard. And, okay, I got to say it. During this show, I became the number one Twitterer.
That is just, we're making history on this show.
We're making history. And I think a lot of it was because we were doing this live and the people in the chat room, and I thank you all, about 928 people in the chat room, were all like kind of saying, quick, join if you haven't joined. So Obama can't do that. He should come on. I would love to see him, go up, give a speech and say, after you go to BarackObama.com, I'd appreciate it if you'd follow me on Twitter. Wouldn't that be funny?
That would be great. And he could say it in such an elegant way, too. That would be the best part
yes,
about it.
Yes, we can. Follow me
yes,
on Twitter.
Yes, we can.
So,
yes.
Amber MacArthur, you're going to come up here. We're going to have you in studio in next month. It's going to be great.
Yes.
I
expect M&Ms when I get there.
You want me to remove any particular color or is any color okay?
I'm just kidding.
All the chocolate you can eat. If it takes chocolate to get Amber MacArthur here, we will have bowls of it. Scharfenberger. We will have Hershey's. We will have See's candies. We will have what? Else? What is it? A Godiva. We will have every. Yeah, she likes Belgian, I think. So my new office manager is Belgian. We will have Belgian chocolates here that you can only get in Brussels. Ghirardelli.
Leo, I like your style. Ghirardelli. Wait a second. I used to live there. You can't fool me.
Amber
That's
MacArthur.
Not Belgium.
Follow Amber, of course, on Twitter. She's Amber MacArthur on Twitter. And you can see her blog at ambermac.com, her newly redesigned and beautiful blog. Did you move off TypePad completely or is it still run by TypePad?
No, I'm on a service called Typo. Have you ever heard of Typo?
No.
Yeah, I'm using Typo right now. Actually, it was set up by a web developer here in Toronto who I do some work with. Actually, sorry, he lives in Montreal, but he works with Archetype on some projects. So I'm using Typo right now. I still have my TypePad blog up there just for people just to kind of redirect them.
They must have shed a tear at Six Apart when you left. I mean, you were huge for them.
Yeah, I used it a lot. But, you know, I hate to say it, but sometimes you just want to move different.
I know, just for change, for change's sake.
I know, yeah, it's terrible to say, but it happens. I loved them. They were great. But I just kind of outgrew them, and I wanted to move on.
So Typo is a blogging engine. It's like WordPress or something. I actually have seen this, but I haven't tried it. So you like it?
Leo, it's so ridiculously easy. It's not even funny. Like,
Wow.
it's not good for some, it's actually not like TypePad's great because for a newbie or someone who doesn't know a lot, they can just go in and everything's there. It's a great user experience. I wouldn't say the user experience on Typo is perfect, but it's there's no bells and whistles. It's very sort of just very plain and I like it for now. It's been fun just for the change.
It looks like it's looks very cool. I'm gonna have to play with it a little bit. Maybe you're
no.
going to win us over. I need to change, you know, just because I just went to WordPress like 6 months ago. I think it's time.
Oh, no.
No. I'm going to stay on WordPress for a while. I'm tied to WordPress. All right, Amber, ambermac.com. And don't forget commandn.tv for her daily or weekly video blog. I just made it daily. And
okay.
And we'll see you next Thursday, or Wednesday, I guess it is, on Net at Night. See you, Amber.
Bye.